This is a previously recorded episode. This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. M Squared TechCast is an affiliate of the Podcast Detroit Network. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Boy, that sounds a lot better than last week. We're acing the tech already here. I'm liking this a lot better.
Yeah, well, you know, issues with episode number one, but we're in episode number two now.
Yes, this is the oh my god, we've got to do this every week now episode of the M Squared TechCast, and I'm Matt Rausch,
and I'm Mike Brennan, and with us in the studio is Mele Osterle. Right?
Welcome,
he's looking
guys.
At me. Lean forward. There you go. Okay.
Welcome, guys.
Smart Finds Internet Marketing, and we'll be talking later, but he's the new wizard of my new website, and so we're going to be discussing We're going to be discussing that as we go forward, but let's a few headlines here, Matt. What you got over there from Technology Century?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about a bunch of events coming up at my employer. It's the Engineering Society of Detroit, and those start actually tomorrow night, Tuesday night, with a free seminar on how to protect yourself against identity theft. That's a big deal. All of us face it these days. It's presented by ESD partner Legal Shield, and you can read more about it at the ESD website, esd.org. It runs from 5:45 to 8 p.m. tomorrow. You can also check out esd.org for more information about the North American International Cyber Summit, October 26th. We're running that for the governor's office. And our ESD Engineering and Technology Job Fairs at the Suburban Collection Showplace on November 16th. So if you'd like to upgrade your job, come to the ESD Job Fair. There will be thousands, literally thousands, of engineering and tech jobs up for grabs.
All right. Well, from MI Tech, hot from the pages of MITechNews.com, as it were, America's Greatest Makers TV show is offering a $1 million grand prize. So those makers out there, and what are makers? Gosh, they're, just think of the old auto shop and machine shop and everything we used to do in high school and carpentry. Well, and now it's a big deal. It's a big movement. It's called the Maker Movement, and everybody's getting on board now. It's been around for a number of years, but it's really getting traction. United Artists Group and Turner Broadcasting is putting on this big shoe, and all the details are at MI Tech News. If you're a maker, you got a great product, you want to see it on TV, and more importantly, you want to go for that $1 million grand prize, and you should check that out.
Are they tied in at all with that maker shop at Allen Park that Ford Motor Company sort of underwrote? Is it that's Tech Shop, I think is
what
it's
called.
Yeah,
that's Tech Shop. That's a little different. There's a smattering of shops around the state. I'm still kind of learning where they're all at. Mm-hmm. There's a really good one in Battle Creek.
Cool.
Grand Rapids has one going. Ann Arbor is Maker Works. I've been out there a couple times checking it out. Other cities are beginning, like you say, Allen Park has one. And you really need to have some pretty sophisticated machinery there. The one that I toured, for instance, it turned out that one of the Zingerman partners is behind it. They spent $500,000 on the facility and on the machines. But you could. There's a metal shop. There's a wood shop. There's an electronics shop. You can do just about everything you want in there if you're real handy, of course.
And and I know at the tech shop in Allen Park, it's for $99 a year, you can get your mitts on about $2 million worth of various kinds of tech equipment, everything from CAD CAM software to stuff that will cut wood, cut metal, you know, cut plastic, anything you want, you know, from CAD CAM drawings to products. All that they ask is that you take some basic classes there so you don't, you know, cut a hand off or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the first requirement.
A little detail.
We want to make sure you know how to use the machines because our lawyers tell us. us that's not a good thing if you don't, you know.
Right, exactly.
We want to keep this place. We don't want to give it away to the lawyers.
Right, exactly. But these are really neat places. And, you know, Michigan is someplace where we actually still make stuff. That's, you know, one of the things I love about it. And these are places where people just with an idea in their head for very limited amounts of money can get their hands on incredibly sophisticated machinery and software. It's a really cool idea. Another story I wanted to mention, I thought this was kind of neat. The University of Michigan has three venture capital funds that are actually run by students, mostly master's and PhD students in business. Well, one of them has made an investment in a company based on U of M research. It's called the Zell Lurie Commercialization Fund, and it's invested in a company called Phasic Incorporated. They're developing advanced protein tests for human tissue samples. The technique developed by this U of M professor allows for testing for multiple proteins out of a single sample, which means researchers can test for a bunch of diseases and conditions at once. And maybe that means when you go to the doctor, they'll only have to take one vial out of you for all these tests that they want to do rather than having to vampire you for half an hour.
You're about a quart low when you leave,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Anyway, one of our content partners, the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, the executive director, Linda Deschet, and Mobile Comply CEO, Elena Farnsworth, are going to be part of the big show, a broadband conference on October 20th called Michigan Mobile Industry Driving Development. So anybody that's really heavily into broadband, into mobile, into all those wireless technologies, this would be something for you to really check out. You're going to have a lot of nationally known experts there, technology experts. So even if you don't know much about it and you want to learn more, again, that's something for you to check out. You can find the details at mitechnews.com.
I'm also happy to report that I'll be doing another one of my tech tours this fall. I've been doing these since 2003, where I go around to Michigan colleges and universities and ask to see their most interesting engineering and science projects. And what I'm looking for in these trips is science projects that have the potential to become new Michigan businesses and create lots of jobs. This year's tour will start October 13th with a visit to Michigan Technological University, way up in Houghton. Once again, as I love to say, Houghton is farther away from Detroit than Washington, D.C. is. So Michigan Tech is the place to go if you want to go away to school, and I mean really seriously away, but still pay in-state tuition. Michigan Tech's also the sponsor of this year's tech tour, so you'll be hearing about them a lot. After Michigan Tech, I'll be visiting Saginaw Valley State University, Central Michigan University, Ferris State University, Grand Valley State University, Western Michigan University, and finally Michigan State University. You can read about the visits on my tech news blog. That's techcentury.com.
Almost 1,000 entrepreneurs from across Michigan are probably going to be attending. At least that's what the Small Business Association of Michigan hopes. Their matchmaking summit on September 22nd at Burton Manor. And it's if you want to meet some big players, if you are a supplier and you want to meet the likes of Michigan State, Wayne State, all these other major partners, DTE, Consumers Energy, even the Detroit Tigers. I'm not sure exactly what you'd supply to the Detroit Tigers, except a better team, I'll tell you that.
Do you know any closers? Yeah, right.
That's it.
Any pitchers?
If you can throw the ball 90 miles an hour, come to this event. The Detroit Tigers are going to want to talk to you.
And if you could even throw it 80 miles an hour if you're left-handed, right?
Yeah,
you
know, or that's something. Or underhand. I mean, I've seen some of the U of M women's softball players that could pitch better than these men they got. We won't go into that.
Absolutely.
But anyway, this event is on September 22nd at Burton Manor. Again, more details at mitechnews.com, or you can go to the Small Business Association of Michigan website, sbam.org. Find out all the details. Sign up.
All right. Finally, for me, one of the stops on my tech tour, Saginaw Valley State, says it raised $28 million in a record capital campaign. And there's a lot of interesting science and technology going on at Saginaw Valley that kind of gets overshadowed by the bigger schools, including a terrific little contract materials testing lab, where if you have a product or an advanced material, they will test it for you and discover its properties in a whole lot of ways. There's a lot of advanced materials work and research going on at Saginaw Valley, which makes sense since the university is just a stone's throw from both Dow Corning and Dow Chemical. You know, a lot of people in that so-called, now they're calling it Great Lakes Bay region rather than Saginaw Bay. I don't know if Saginaw has a negative connotation or what, but they want want to call it Great Lakes Bay now.
They're trying to stay away from Flynn is what they're trying to stay from.
But there's a lot of really interesting material science type technologies going on in that area. I know Central Michigan has a really neat business incubator there where there's a lot of research going on into advanced materials too. This is the whole nanotech thing, that Michigan was supposed to be a really big player in, and it kind of got absorbed into other products and services where there's small tech in a lot of things now. But this lab at Saginaw Valley is really cool. They have a lot of other neat things going on there.
And because we're big on STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, math, and now the arts, the Michigan Arts Council has awarded nearly $10 million in grants this year, or actually for the 2015-2016 year, to a number of organizations out there, 462 recipients actually. 600 applications were received, and they did 133 reviews. That's good. We're putting $10 million into the arts. I mean, it's been neglected for a long time. It's good to see that we're actually getting back into that because when I was in high school, which, of course, we were still riding dinosaurs back then, but arts was very big, and it's really taken it in the neck over the last decade or two. All these cutbacks have occurred.
Well, and that's it's interesting you should mention that is the next issue of Tech Century Magazine, which is the glossy magazine, quarterly magazine that I do for the Engineering Society of Detroit. Our next issue theme is engineering and the arts. There's a huge connection between engineering and the arts, most obviously through architecture, but also through a lot of other things. There's a lot of people involved in very sophisticated art and design work that has a really substantial high-tech component to it. And so we're going to be looking at that in the magazine. It sounds like this thing might be right up our alley.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. How are we doing on time, Jessica? Give me the sign here. 4 minutes. Okay, good.
I wanted to mention that people with story ideas, that would like to get their high-tech businesses, their high-tech ideas exposed to the Michigan marketplace could contact either Mike or me. Obviously, both would be best. And we are, sort of sharing copy now back and forth between the two of us. There's a link to Mike's site on my page, on my tech news blog. There's a link to my stuff on Mike's e-newsletter that comes out on Fridays.
And on the new website as well. I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. So. And so basically, if you've got news, if you've got a company, if you've got a new process, a new product, a new service, new hires, new customers, all that kind of thing, let us know about it. Quite frequently, I think Mike and my job is just letting Michigan's technology community know that it exists among itself, because there's a lot of times I feel like people don't know that they can get things done here in Michigan that they think they had to go out of state for. My favorite example of that came from my former employer at WWJ, where there was a guy with computer-aided design software that was installing it in a small server that you would sell as a sort of a unit. You just plug it into a rack, and he didn't know that there was a place here in Michigan called Rave Computer that could actually build that purpose-built computer for him. And so he says, why should I, contract with somebody in China when I can talk to people in Sterling Heights?
And actually go eyeball them. It's kind of hard to eyeball them in China unless
right.
you're Skyping or something.
Well,
right?
Or unless you like 13-hour airplane flights. I don't know anyone who really does.
No. Food's better, though.
Well, but, true. Well, I don't know. There's decent places in Sterling Heights, I think. There's one or two or three.
Yeah.
So, but it's called Rave Computer, and they do great work in Sterling Heights. They do a lot of work for the Defense Department, actually. They're part of that whole Macomb County Defense Corridor up and down Van Dyke and Mound Road where they won't really tell you what they're doing out there.
Yes. Well, we just know it's something cool, though, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Matt, if you don't mind, I'm going to chime in on that.
Because, sure, absolutely.
If I go back to 1994 when we had opened up our internet group, we had a connectivity division and we had a network operations center up in Pontiac at the time. We got our equipment from Rave.
Oh, okay.
That's how far back.
Well, yeah, Rick has been around. Rick Darter is the CEO. Yeah. He's been around quite a while. He's a great guy and does terrific work there. And, it's funny. The first time I visited there, he was making computers for the AWACS airplane. And I said, well, what do these computers do? And he said, I don't know. I don't want to know. You know, they're just computers that go into the AWACS that runs sort of theater warfare operations, or you know keeps an eye on the bad guys. And he just built them to a specification. They had to do a certain amount of calculations in a certain way, and that's all he knew. So,
but most of his computers were also not necessarily mainstream either. So
right.
We got, for example, we used a lot of Sun Microsystems servers at the time.
Okay,
and that's where he was one of the few that where we can go to get those, for example. So
yep.
Yeah, I'm right up there with you on Rave.
Okay, yeah, great little company. One more Michigan technology story that needs to be told on a regular basis.
Absolutely. And again, let's. Matt still publishes with his Technology Century publication. Of course, I have MI Tech News. Tell them how they can reach you, Matt.
It's mroush at esd.org. That's ESD, Edward Sam David, .org. And it's MROUSH. People are always trying to put a C into it, except here in Detroit, where there's Roush Racing. So that sort of makes it easier for me. I wish I was related. Unfortunately, sadly, I am not.
Oh, well.
So.
And I'm Mike Brennan, and that's email address is my last name, Brennan, BRENNAN, at mitechnews.com. Now, are we having technical difficulties then? Did our guest phone in for the second segment?
I keep trying to call Skype, but I just saw that Dave had posted on, in Podcast Detroit shows. Skype is currently down globally. It's not, there was actually something about it on the internet. So that's my.
Well, that's interesting.
Boy, are we in trouble.
2 weeks in a row. So the best I can recommend is we use the phone and put it up to the microphone.
We'll have to wing it, I guess.
That is one way to do it. Yeah, the sound quality won't be great.
No, it won't be wonderful.
Sound quality is not great on a regular cell phone frequently, so it's not that much
different. Skype is down globally. I don't suppose this has anything to do with the fact that Microsoft acquired it.
Oh, my gosh, that's funny. That's exactly what Dave said.
Even think about that. Okay.
That's
yeah, the
hilarious.
Only thing worse is to be acquired by IBM, I think. So.
All right. So I will contact Jeff Johnson, who's our guest in the second hour, who's supposed to be calling in.
I will contact Leah Wiste of the Interim Executive Director of Michigan Interfaith Power and Light. She's going to be talking to us about renewable energy in Michigan and the state's renewable portfolio standards and net metering and IPL's fine work in driving energy efficiency at Michigan's faith-based institutions. And Leah, if you're listening out there, I got to think you might want to just give me a call, and we'll if it's not fixed by 3:30, we will put my cell phone up to the microphone. We'll be able to hear you.
And where are we?
This is a previously recorded episode.
And we're back on M2 TechCast, and gosh, we're having fun because we just discovered that our Skype line, which is how our guests come into the studio when they're not physically here, is down.
Yes, and this is Matt Roush, and it's not just down for us. This is apparently a worldwide problem. I'm reading a headline on ZDNet right here. Skype down, a promised fix is on the way. Well, it didn't get here quickly enough for at least this segment of the program.
So we'll wing it. I want to introduce, hopefully, I don't know if he can hear me out there too well, but it's Jeff Johnson, who's the COO of Supported Intelligence. A little disclaimer, he is one of my advertisers, but he does have a cool product. It's called Rapid Recursive. Can you hear us all right, Jeff?
I can. Pleasure to join you, Mike and Matt.
Well, okay, I've got you on my headphones.
Cool.
That means the audience can hear you as well. That's a good thing.
So you just came out with version 1.5, but let's back up a little bit. I bet a lot of people don't even know what the Rapid Recursor Toolbox is. Why don't you explain it to them?
All right. So without getting too technical, our goal here was to bring some of the most powerful methods from economics and statistics out of the textbooks and into the hands of practical business people. We've had people, a bunch of Nobel laureates actually, have been writing about the methods we're using going back as far as 1960. But ours is the first product that you can download right now from the internet and get a warranty with it that allows you to use recursive methods, which are a better approach to modeling a lot of the complex decisions that we as business people face almost every day.
Yeah,
some of the common
explain
decisions
to me
that we model here are, you know, marketing and promotional strategy, so a targeted marketing strategy, or how do you manage your inventory in terms of when should you be reordering, when do you restock your shelves, and we've even gone as far as analyzing how you should be filling out a bracket for the March Madness tournament pool.
In fact, that's what you did last year to introduce that, right? You did the March Madness thing, and you did quite well with that.
That's true, yeah. I think your audience is most likely to be familiar with us through that. So we ended up calling that Smart Bracket, and we did really well through the first four rounds of the tournament. And then along with everybody else, we ended up taking a bath when we didn't end up calling the right champion. But we still had a great
crash
time with
and
that.
Burn, yes.
Pretty good success for our software.
Well, speak for yourself. My bracket was destroyed the very first day. But I wanted to, for somebody whose last math class came when Richard Nixon was president, I just wanted to ask you what does recursive refer to in the title of the product?
So recursion itself is kind of a computer science term, but I'll stay away from that definition. Essentially, it's repeating the same process or a very similar process over and over again. So what we do is take a problem that you face, not exactly the same problem every day, but maybe a version of a problem. So again, targeted marketing. What should I be sending to which of my customers? That general question hangs around, but the solution to it changes day to day. So we're able to break that problem down into the single, what do I do today, and how does that impact tomorrow? So we're able to provide a strategy that you can take for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years out by solving it one day at a time.
And what's new about version 1.5?
Version 1.5 is our most graphically intense version of the software so far. We've been focused in previous versions about bringing the power of these methods to the users. Now we're really at the point where we've got all our algorithms working, and we're happy with everything, and we're making improvements on visualizing problems and helping people compose them. So we've taken a lot of the burden off the user in terms of characterizing a problem and creating a lot of things that used to be done manually. We now have a bunch of functions that will read in historical data from a business and help to compose a problem right from there, taking a lot of the work out. We also have some standard functions that will generate parts of the problem from basic things in theory, so you can use well-defined distributions when you need to define how things transition from one day to the next.
Now, I know,
and we've also updated our support for complex problems, so adding multiple dimensions to the problem you're looking at.
Okay, I know Patrick Anderson's affiliated with your group, and I know his son is involved with the group. Why don't you talk a little bit? A lot of people know who Patrick is. Why don't we talk about that?
All right, yeah. So Patrick Anderson, most notably the founder and CEO of Anderson Economic Group, another East Lansing company that's been around since 1997 here, providing public policy, market industry analysis, and financial valuation consulting. So Patrick is one of the most respected economists in the state of Michigan, arguably nationwide. He was, in 2004, writing his most recent book, which is called The Economics of Business Valuation, and he was looking for some methods that would help him solve the types of problems that he wanted to talk about, particularly how do you value a business that isn't traded on the NASDAQ or any of the other big stock exchanges. And he really realized there wasn't much out there that would help him do that. So in his infinite wisdom, he set out to create his own version of the software that would bring these methods out. And he spent about 7 years of just trial and error and getting it right. And finally, we had our first prototype of the Rapid Recursion Toolbox. And then Patrick put together a company in 2012 to finish developing that, establish the rigorous testing methods that we still use today, and bring that out to market.
Well, tell us a little bit about, I'm always interested when people start businesses, Jeff, what your personal background is and sort of what got the entrepreneurial bug to bite you.
That's a good question. So I wasn't actually around when Support Intelligence was formed. I came in about 6 months after. I had heard about Anderson Economic Group and I was inquiring about some employment there when they directed me to the Support Intelligence website, and I really fell in love with the idea of bringing new methods to market and exploring how we can improve the decision-making of people around Michigan and around the world. So I graduated from MSU in 2012 with degrees in political theory and economics. So this was really quite an interesting way for me to apply some of the stuff that I'd learned in class. And I started as an application developer here and then started taking some more of the management responsibilities, and that's where I am today.
All right. So How are we going to – how do you price that? Or give me some ballpark figures on that. If somebody's really interested in getting involved with your product, what's the next steps?
The next step would definitely be getting a license to MATLAB. I don't know how familiar your audience is going to be with that, but given that we're in Detroit and we've got a lot of engineering firms around, I think it's not going to be too foreign of a word. But MATLAB is a powerful mathematical computing software, and that's really the basis for our product at this point. So that's sold by the MathWorks. Once you have a license to that, you can download the Rapid Recursive Toolbox, which plugs right into that very easily from our website, which is supportedintelligence.com. And a commercial license to our product is currently $1,900. And then we also offer, along with our general toolbox, data analytics and custom solution services, where we'll come in and do some consulting work and build custom models to fit your exact problem. And those we recommend that you call, and we'd be happy to consult with people to figure out exactly what they need, how we can help.
All right, and tell us a little bit about the company in terms of how many employees you have. And I also always ask people whether or not they have openings, and if so, what those openings are in.
Sure. Right now we're running with a pretty lean team. I've got myself and, as Mike mentioned, Neil Anderson, who's Patrick's son. Neil is currently our lead developer and was responsible for version 1.5, which we just pushed out last week. So those are our two day-to-day guys. And then we've also got Patrick Anderson as our founder and executive chairman, as well as Scott Watkins, our CFO, and Matthew Irie as our chief technology officer. We do not have current openings, although we'll have some coming up soon, mostly on the marketing and sales side, but potentially also a few development openings.
And then how many customers, not necessarily, obviously 1.5 just came out, but I mean, have you lined up customers for the previous version?
We've had a couple of customers for our application packs, which were the early implementations of what we're now referring to just as industry solutions. And we've also had a handful of academics who've downloaded our software across the country and are experimenting with using the recursive methods that we provide.
What do you think would be, what's the perfect company for what you're offering? Who are perfect companies? There's probably multiple ones, but I mean, if somebody's listening out there, and what characteristics do you think would be a good fit?
Yeah, so we're looking for probably a medium to large size company that's collecting data, but may not be too sure about exactly what they should be doing with it. Or they do have an existing solution and they're not quite happy with the results they're getting. So what we really ideally look for is somebody who has the historical information on choices that they've made and how their customer base has responded to that, or how that's impacted their business multiple times. So not just a one-time choice, but here's what we've done, here's what happened, here's how we changed, and here's what happened in response to that change. So we're really looking for that kind of series of data that's available that we can really mine to find the patterns and figure out exactly how to best position the business for success in the future.
Hey, Jeff, this is Mely Ostele. I'm the CEO of Smart Finds Internet Marketing. I'm in the studio today. And as I'm listening to you, the one thing I'm wondering that may help the audience to do some comparison is, you know, how would you guys, do you compare yourself or would you compare yourself to HubSpot, who spends a lot of time in terms of data analysis for a lot of companies relative to marketing?
Right. So our real differentiator is, again, our recursive methods and the fact that we take a very long-term approach to the solutions. So we're not quite as focused on the immediate, what can I do to squeeze the last cent out today, but how can I kind of maximize and nurture relationships so that we're maximizing the value of a business going forward and not only looking at immediate profit.
So basically,
we're taking a different approach to a similar problem.
Okay, but it sounds to me like you would either augment what HubSpot is already doing, or perhaps just be able to take everything from the beginning and run it through for a longer period of time then.
No, I'll be honest, I'm having a little trouble hearing you there, but I think it sounds like you've got it.
Okay,
pretty well summarized there.
All right, Jeff, we got about a minute left. Why don't you tell folks how they can find your website, get more details, contact information, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. So our website is up and live, and just like you, Mike, we've launched a new one in the last week here. So we're at www.supportedintelligence.com, S-U-P-P-O-R-T-E ibintelligence.com. We are also available by phone at 517-333-7024. I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody has. And you can get a hold of us at sales@supportedintelligence.com.
Well, there you have it. So that's Jeff Johnson, who's the Chief Operating Officer for Supported Intelligence in East Lansing. And he's got a great new product. If you're working on the big data conundrum, he's going to help you solve some of the problems with that. Right, Jeff?
Absolutely.
All right. This is Mike Brennan with M2 TechCast.
And Matt Rausch, and we'll be back in just a moment.
This is a previously recorded episode.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the M Squared TechCast. This is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan, and boy, are we having technical difficulties today with Skype, but we're working around it.
Yeah, we'll do a workaround here. The music is at least working, and since I picked it out, of course, I like it.
Yes.
But our next guest is from an organization that I've been familiar with for some time now. It is called Michigan Interfaith Power and Light. It is an energy efficiency and power organization for faith-based organizations in Michigan. And we have with us today Leah Wiste, who is Outreach and Advocacy Coordinator, and also currently Interim Executive Director. So, Leah, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much.
All right, so tell us a little bit about the, I should use the word, I guess, advisedly, genesis of Michigan Interfaith Power and Light, how the organization got started, how long it's been around, and what you folks do.
Right, so Michigan IPL was founded in 2002 by Father Charles Morris, a Catholic priest. And he collaborated at the time with a fellow named Mark Cleavy, who was working at the Michigan Energy Office. And they kind of married their two interests, which were, of course, you know, coming from a faith perspective and also working in the energy sector and wanting to implement as much energy efficiency as possible. And so it seemed like doing energy efficiency in houses of worship was a natural kind of collaboration for them. And so since then, we've kind of broadened our work to include, you know, still doing energy efficiency in houses of worship, which is a great way for congregations not only to save money and put more money towards their missions, but also, you know, live more lightly on the earth and be good stewards of the earth. So we continue with that action piece, and we also work in two other areas, which are education and advocacy. So with our education work, we focus on just creating more awareness in congregations about how you can make your house of worship more sustainable, things that you can do in all sorts of areas, from water usage to how you run your Sunday coffee hour to, you know, what kind of light bulbs you're using. And so trying to do workshops and provide resources to help houses of worship, you know, take these actions. And finally, the third piece is advocacy. So we try to bring faith voices into policy discussions about clean energy, advocating for clean energy from a place of faith and doing what's right, what's morally right, and also talking about how certain clean energy policies affect faith communities.
All right, and speaking of the advocacy part, could you tell me what you folks think of the energy legislation that's now currently rattling around Lansing? One of the things it would do would be to sort of throw a monkey wrench into some of the residential solar projects with net metering, and also would make some changes in the state's energy competitiveness program, although that would affect mostly really large industrial users.
Yeah, so net metering is definitely something that would affect houses of worship who have installed solar panels, for example, and there are a number of those in Michigan. We have a couple of members who have or are in the process of installing solar panels, and so in case your listeners aren't familiar with net metering, that is where if you have your own solar panels and you generate an excess of electricity, more than you can use at any time, you are essentially able to sell that to the grid at the same rate that you pay for electricity. And what this changed policy would do is basically you would sell any excess electricity to the grid at a wholesale price, and any electricity that you bought, you would buy at a retail price. So this would completely change the economics of, you know, either at home or on a house of worship solar installation. We have a church in Saline, the First Presbyterian Church of Saline. Last summer, they got, how many solar panels was it? Like 16 solar panels online, which for them was enough to reduce their electricity bill by about 66% over the course of the year. So you can imagine if those rates were to be changed, if they were no longer able to sell their electricity back at the retail rate, that they would completely change those projections, and ultimately it wouldn't probably make financial sense for the church to do it. Of course, churches decide to put solar panels on their roofs for lots of reasons, right? For some, the financial piece is a big motivator, and for others, it's more about earth stewardship. But in any case, certainly would give a lot to think about. So we are we're not that thrilled with the energy legislation that's on the table in Lansing right now. I think
all right, well, let me play once again I advisedly use the phrase here devil's advocate, since you're a faith-based organization, but the utility argument is, look, if we have to buy excess power from anybody, another utility or another generation station, we have to buy it at the wholesale rate. Why should individuals be any different? That's the utility response to that argument. What do you think of that?
What's my response to that?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say that the utility business model needs to change. We are going to be closing down several coal-fired power plants in the coming year, and so some have projected that this will lead to a generation shortfall. So, so really, I think it's in everybody's interest to kind of make our grid function in a different and more reliable way. And when you've got distributed generation, you help ensure grid reliability. I think that's how I would respond.
Okay, and in terms of what people can do to save energy, it's amazing now that I think about this as I'm asking this question, how many of the little cliches we use are based in scripture, because I'm thinking low-hanging fruit here. What is some of the low-hanging fruit that people could use to save energy that you've seen work really effectively for houses of worship?
So for houses of worship, often we're talking about old structures. Many times you've got a sanctuary with a very high roof. So often there are many, many opportunities for energy efficiency. In a commercial structure like a house of worship, the bulk of your electricity usage goes to lighting. And so that's, an obvious place to start. And with the falling prices of LEDs, it's also a place where you can get a pretty quick return on your investment. And so that includes everything from exit lights to, the lights in your pendants, in your sanctuary, and such. I think another big one is doing air sealing. So putting door sweeps on the doors. If you've got windows, so sometimes you've got these single pane stained glass windows. Finding a way to help insulate those is really good. Of course, it's always a trick, right? Because you want to maintain the beauty of the windows, but it can be done. So that's something to look into. So I think those are a good couple places to start.
This is Mike Brennan, by the way. What, if any, changes then would you like to see? Do you like the system the way it is? What's your opinion on that? I mean, is there some middle ground here?
I'm sorry, say again, do I like what the way it is?
The changes they want to make versus what exists now, is there a middle ground here that you could live with?
For net metering.
For net metering, yes, I'm sorry.
Oh, for net metering. I am definitely not a policy wonk, but I would say in general, what we've seen in Michigan are that the energy efficiency and renewable portfolio standards that were put into place in 2008 have been very effective. Utilities have met the goals that were stated, that were laid out in the policy. Costs have gone down for ratepayers. The price of wind has fallen in that time period, making that, you know, increasingly viable. And, you know, if you look, you know, countrywide, you'll see that states with those standards in place, you know, they've got more energy efficiency and they've got more clean energy than states that don't have those standards. So for us, I think that is really the essential piece, is that these standards work and they should be extended and they should be expanded.
So are there any other states you can point to that have the system that you think would work really well in Michigan to solve this net metering issue?
I don't have the expertise for that, unfortunately.
All right. Tell me a little bit about Interfaith Power and Light in terms of when was the organization established and how many projects have you been involved with over the years?
Yeah, so again, it was established in 2002, and I think that we have probably worked with something on the order of about 400 houses of worship on energy efficiency. Some of these come via partnership with utilities. So we're currently working with Consumers Energy to do lighting upgrades in houses of worship in three geographic areas in Michigan, and we're targeting to do about 95 of those. A couple of years ago, we worked with DTE to do 48 Detroit area houses of worship. We've done other things, you know, in the UP and such. But, you know, often it depends on what the utilities are mandated to do, and then they kind of reach out to us for our expertise on how do you work with the house of worship and how do you make an impact there.
All right, and in terms of, you know, the projects that you're working on, what's a typical level of energy savings? What kind of percentage do people see?
Yeah, so again, it really depends on, you know, what the utility wants to do, and then we advocate for, you know, what's going to benefit houses of worship most, but the utilities are the ones that have the biggest control over how much they're going to invest in each house of worship. For our Detroit project, which has been completed for a couple of years, so we have, you know, the data is in, what we found was that an energy assessment plus about $800 worth of upgrades that were directly installed, so then there's labor on top of that, we were able to demonstrate about an 11% savings on average across the board. So if you're, you know, if your church has, let's say, just $10,000 in annual utility bills, you know, that's a good $1,000 savings. Now, we have houses of worship that have $100,000 energy bills, right? Because they're a big complex with, let's say, a school attached, and then you've got a personage, right, where the pastor lives. And so these could really, really be significant for some houses of worship.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for your time with us here today, and we're sorry about the technical snafu, but it's not just us. Skype is down all over the planet, apparently, so don't take it personally. Leah Wisty, we're glad you were with us, Outreach and Advocacy Coordinator and Interim Executive Director of Michigan Interfaith Power and Light. One last thing, Leah, if people want more information on Michigan Interfaith Power and Light, where do they go on the web?
They should go to michiganipl.org, or they can contact me directly at outreach@miipl.org.
Okay. Thanks very much, Leah.
Thanks so much.
This is a previously recorded episode.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan, and we're back at M2 TechCast.
Indeed we are. It's Matt Rausch. I'm Mike's partner in crime on this endeavor here.
And we have Mele Ostele. I always struggle with your name, Mele.
That's okay, Mike.
And Smart Finds Internet Marketing. He's on the show today, well, for many reasons, but one of them is we just launched our new and improved website, mobile-friendly, graphically enhanced photos. It's got everything going for it. And Mele and his team has been instrumental in helping me make that transition since June or so, I think.
Yeah, it's taken a few months, but we're there.
definitely.
So since you're the wizard here, why don't you tell folks what they're going to see? I have it up here right next to my microphone, but what are all the changes that that they're going to be able to see when they come?
I think, you know, Mike, for your website compared to where it was when you first contacted me in April, the biggest change is going to be the visual, is that the website needs to be engaging to people. So when visitors get there, what are they going to see? And it's not just about the homepage. It's about the inside pages. So instead of just looking at text, let's figure out how to take a look at photos, images, and enhance the text copy with something a little bit more engaging. That's going to be the first thing. The other, I think, more important item to visitors is going to be the fact that it's mobile-friendly now. You're going to be able to pick it up, and it's going to respond to you based on a tablet, on a cell phone device, or a laptop. It won't make a difference. I think those are some of the key features as far as visitors are concerned. Obviously, we have a lot of technical back-end things that are equally effective.
Yes.
I think you're heading in the right direction at this point.
And we still have a fair amount of tweaks to make now, folks. We just came up live on Sunday, and as you know, anytime you launch anything, you're going to have some issues, but minor little things, and probably something that nobody else would notice, but that we would notice.
Exactly.
But other people
we
would
know.
Go, hey, it looks fine to me, right?
We know what they are.
Yeah, so, but it's also going to allow me to plug in a lot of audio podcasts better, more easily. When we move to video, which I hope to do no later than the first quarter of 2016, we'll be able to load the video into the site that'll display correctly.
The advertisers are another major element. They are going to be
We have
more
a new
front
ad management module we're fiddling around with this week, and hopefully, you know, sometime this week we'll get all that worked out. And we'll be able to hopefully take third-party ads, I think, because we've had some agencies ask us if we can do that, and I wasn't able to do that before. So I'm now in the 21st century. Thank you very much.
Well,
that
can be the real trick in a website, is to be able to take third-party ads without slowing down site performance, right?
Right, and you know, I think on a case-by-case basis, we'll have to take a look and see what those each of them are. No matter what you do, third-party scripts can be troubling.
Yes. Well, if you ever go to any of that clickbait stuff that you see on Facebook, where it's like, you know, 10 most unrecognizable celebrity makeovers, and then you sit there waiting for half an hour for the page to load, because the page is pulling in ads from all over the planet, basically. No doubt. So, yeah, you do want to be careful with that.
I do think there's an interesting component to the MichiganTechNews.com website project that it's going to be very interesting to monitor. I remember when we looked at Google Analytics for the first time for Michigan Tech News, it was not quite what Mike hadn't was imagining. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that there was a difference between the raw server logs, as far as visitor information is concerned, versus what are visitors doing when they get there. And so from the standpoint of taking Google Analytics and monitoring its progress and performance, I think we'll be able to further enhance this website in a manner that's going to make the visitors more engaging.
We're going to be adding some stuff. In fact, this week we're moving to two new e-newsletters. I've been working real closely with Rose on his staff. We're going to be launching one on Wednesday that'll be just podcasts only and promotion of upcoming podcasts, as well as promotion of what's going on Internet Advisor Radio, which is one of our very first partners. Anybody else out there, we work at Mobile Technology Association of Michigan as podcasts, and we'll weave those in. The ladies, the former Digital Divas, they've come up with a new name, and I don't recall what it is off the top of my head. When they start that again here in a few weeks, we'll make sure we get them included.
Oh, I'm sure Kathleen will let you know what the new name is, right?
Not a problem.
Absolutely.
There. Yeah, she's
on top of it. Absolutely.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, Maile, what's your background in this industry? How did you happen to get into this industry? I'm always one of those guys. I'm always interested in the people story behind the business.
Oh, thanks. I started. Our company has been in advertising and marketing going back to 87.
Okay.
And
so you go back to CDs then?
Believe me.
Yeah, okay, yep.
Pre-Windows 3.1.
Oh, yeah.
300-baud modems, though.
Oh, geez. Oh, boy,
that whole industry.
But
I started off the Internet Group in 94. And as you can imagine, the world was a lot different back then. We were going from 14.4 modems to 28.8, and that was a big deal.
Sure, yeah.
And
the blistering Fast 56 came out, right?
Yeah, Netscape, Yahoo were the big deal, right? That's the era that we come from.
AOL was the king, right?
AOL was the pre-king, right?
Exactly. My favorite thing about that was when I first got on the internet in 94, there was actually a blacklist of internet advertisers, companies who dared to use the internet to promote their filthy right, advertising, exactly. And you were not supposed to patronize them because they were sullying the internet
right.
somehow.
And
that's how everybody advertises everything now. That's just how it's
right.
done.
Nowadays, that's what's happened. And I think that as the 90s progressed, the internet evolved. It became a better business tool. As Google went public in 2004, it became a better strategic tool. Now we have better means of running advertising. We have better means of marketing and promoting a business, getting a brand out there. The world has changed. And, you know, with that, our company has changed too. We're now a full service web marketing agency. So we had everything from strategy to implementation to basically interpretation of the results as well. And what do you do to improve what you're doing? And so that makes us a lot different. And I think that one of my conversations I had with Mike earlier about his website, and I've had this conversation with other fellow baby boomers. That's usually the crowd I'm talking to, or is my fellow baby boomers, is, you know, just because it's the internet and having a keyboard connected to it doesn't mean that it has to be a tech guy that's going to execute the process for you. Marketing is a process. It's not a technical task. We have to take a look at the technical people as though they were the printers of the old world. Mm-hmm. You know, you would come to your ad agency and they would be the ones who are going to determine the strategy and the creative and the branding. And then they would hire the printers to get the job done, or the radio stations or the TV stations. And so what's happening now is businesses are bypassing ad agencies and marketers and going directly to the technicians. And they're wondering why things don't work.
Right.
So.
Well, there still is there's an element of the artist in this still. There's an element of creativity.
It's a discipline. There's no question. It's a process-oriented discipline versus a task-oriented service.
Yep, absolutely. Well, as one of my former bosses at WWJ told me, George Ann Herbert, who's now with Detroit Public Television, she said that you got to just remember you're in the information business, you're not in the trucking business. If you deliver something, you can't fall in love with what kind of truck you're using.
Correct.
There's always a new truck. What's important is what's in the truck.
It's about marketing communications,
yes.
Right? How do you communicate out? And then the other part, especially when it comes to MichiganTechNews.com now, is how are the visitors to the website going to respond?
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody has to understand what the data that we're looking at. And we're not just looking at one set of data. We're going to be looking at five sets of data and then looking at seeing where the changes are and what do we need to do to improve it.
And mobile friendly is just absolutely critical these days. We crossed that Rubicon a couple years ago, I think,
absolutely.
Where more than half of web usage became on these little screens rather than the big ones.
Well, in 2014, there was a statistic that was released on the web that we have now more mobile devices than we do have human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And then mobile devices have exceeded laptops and desktops.
I guess people need more than one. Well, you know what? I've got two because I've got a cell phone and I've got a little Samsung Galaxy tablet too that's just sort of a fun thing to mess around with.
Right.
And they all have IP addresses. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole other segment. And then, you know, one of the changes along this, you're bringing up IP addresses as well. We're moving to IP version 6, you know, from IP version 4. And 6, I don't know if you guys have ever looked at an IP 6 address, but it's a whole different ballgame.
Sure, yeah.
What we used to. So.
Yeah, it's not four sets of three numbers.
No,
it's something else entirely, right?
It's I think it's almost 8 sets in each of numbers, and each set of numbers has 4 inside of it, and mixed with letters and numbers.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Well, it's like the old, when we used to have just a regular house phone, and when I worked in New York, used to know you could give me an area code, and I could tell you exactly where it was. Gosh, now, I mean, there's area codes with the sides area codes, and you just don't know where anything is anymore.
Yeah, we've come a long ways.
Yep, absolutely. Do you have another thing that I always like to ask people in the tech business in Detroit is do you have openings in what skills, and do you ever have trouble filling openings? What are you looking for right
now? That's kind of an interesting question. I will say that I've never had trouble filling openings. There's always somebody out there. And perhaps one of the reasons why it's not too hard to fill openings is this. The internet opened up to the general public in 1989. Mm. It just so happens my oldest son was born in 89. He's 26 now. Well, if you were born Ben, you're 26. If you were 10, you're 36. If you were 20, you're 46. I mean, that's the age range right now who are actively in the workforce. And so if you're 26, 25 to 35 range, you've got the skills that a firm like ours are looking for already. You understand the digital space. You understand the devices. You understand the internet. And it's very easy for you to engage in helping support the marketing process or the communications. So
mm-hmm. We've got about 2 minutes left, Emily. Why don't you tell them a little bit about if somebody thinks they have these skills and they want to reach out to you, how do they do that?
Come to our website, smartfindsmarketing.com. Fill out our contact us page and it'll come to a few of us and we'll review your resume and figure out whether or not we have a spot to fill.
Okay.
And you have, what, 6 or 7 folks working for you now, right?
Well, actually, our complement is actually 15 people.
15.
You've only been exposed to a few handful of them.
Okay. All right. I deal with 3 or 4 of them exactly. On a regular basis.
And do you have people working remotely? I know a lot of people do these
absolutely.
Days.
Yeah, yes. Sure. I mean, we have I'll just give you an idea. One of our writers is actually in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
I have another technical person who is in Virginia. So, yes.
That's true of a lot of businesses these days and even a lot of nonprofits. At the
absolutely.
Engineering Society, we have someone who had to move to St. Louis for family reasons. He still works for us.
Well, but so. Yeah. I mean, cell phones, email, Skypes,
video conference, right? Yeah,
at least when Skype's not down.
Well, yeah. Except for today, no Skype.
That's got to be putting a crimp in some business. I mean, seriously, it very nearly put a crimp in us.
Absolutely. Well, I think what everybody's going to do is jump over to Google Hangouts now.
That's going to be the option.
Well, that's true. Yeah, Google Plus didn't make it, but Google Hangouts just might after this.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we have reached the end of our hour pretty much. I want to thank our guests once again. Let me get the list out here so I don't forget anyone. Jeff Johnson from Supported Intelligence, really interesting company. Leah Wiste, Interim Executive Director of Michigan Interfaith Power and Light. And in the studio, thank goodness, so Jess didn't have to hold up another phone. Maile Ostale of SmartFinds Internet Marketing.
It was great being here, guys.
Yeah. And I want to thank Jessica Rangel, also our most excellent broadcast engineer.
That's the title on her business card. So
most excellent broadcast engineer.
It
I think so.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And this is Mike Brennan with my partner.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And we're on M2 TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. M Squared TechCast is an affiliate of the Podcast Detroit Network. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. This is a previously recorded episode.